we are getting together, remotely of course, to talk about leadership. I'm sure each of us has his or her unique perspective. I think it will be interesting for us to just jump in and share whatever we think moves the conversation along. Don't worry about any fumbles. Before I share our conversation with our listeners, I'll edit things so it sounds like we totally had our act together. Just jump in and I'll fix any problems later. With that stipulation, to get us started, perhaps David will start, since I know he has some interesting ideas about leadership as it relates to government versus other types of situations where leadership is usually given as the reason for whether things work out as expected or not. Will it work for you, David?
Sure, I will get us started. We hear a lot about national leaders, state leaders, community leaders, and even family leadership as a necessary quality of a successful parent, but I wonder. If a business or nonprofit organization fails, it is usually seen as a failure of leadership. Those in charge fire the executive and get a new leader, hoping for better times. If that doesn't work, the organization eventually folds and everyone moves on to other ventures. With the national, state, and local governments and to some extent with families, that doesn't happen. Rather, things get worse and may get better and then they get worse again but not much changes. Government and families are not much different than they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 50 years ago. The same is true for our schools, public services, and most all of the institutions and sub-institutions in our lives. There are better times and worse times, but there is a persisting sameness that characterizes things over time. When the state of our institutions is experiencing the good times, the success is attributed to good leadership. During the worst times, the explanation is in terms of economic conditions, social turmoil, international conflict, or other factors that normal people like us can barely understand and can't affect in any significant way. It definitely has little to nothing to do with leadership, or so they say. Perhaps the underlying point is that the concept of leadership doesn't and shouldn't apply to government, families, and permanent institutions, or at least institutions that are supposed to be permanent. The political folks, institutional employees, parents, and others taking care of business in those environments are supposed to do little more or less than what they can to prevent the worst times and to do whatever they can to maximize the good times. If we are all on one of those institutional trains or another, we may not need or want a leader. The train can only go where the track is headed. That isn't a specific destination. Instead, it is more like an adventure into unknown territory. What should we expect from those in charge of running the train?
They should keep it moving.
They should keep it on the track.
They should avoid running into obstacles that appear on the track from time to time.
They shouldn't lose any train cars as we go along.
They should make very sure no one falls off the train.
Maybe a real need is for fewer leaders and more conductors who take responsibility for the passengers and who make sure everyone stays on the train and has a quality ride.
If the change isn't too abrupt, I want to focus our attention more specifically on leadership and what it means to lead and how we might actually lead. Let me start with a question. Are you a leader or striving to become a leader? If so, it is important to identify your leadership style and to be aware of why you prefer a particular style. As becomes clear, there are alternative and distinct styles and each has its strengths and limitations. The better you understand your style, the more effective you are as you exploit the strengths of your style while compensating for its limitations.
Top dog leadership. If this is your style, you value a high level of personal control over and direct management of your followers. You work best with very cooperative followers and have low tolerance for non-compliance. You run a tight ship. Your followers typically defer to your perspective and are eager to do things your way. They tend to compete for your approval and may prioritize getting your blessing over getting the job done.
Lead dog leadership. You are a visionary who sets the organizational course. You reject use of power and control, placing your faith in the goodwill and principled behavior of your followers. You favor followers who function well with minimal supervision and direction and who naturally see the validity of and value in following your vision. Your style is an excellent fit for kindred spirits but is less compatible for those who may occasionally question your vision or who desire more structure and guidance. Your followers may tend to separate into the consonant majority and the small but dissonant minority.
Task leadership, your strength is in getting the job done and depends on having qualified followers who are ready to work. Your followers are expected to bring the necessary expertise to each task and efficiently handle their piece of the project. This works especially well for followers who are expert at what they do and neither need or want direct supervision or involvement beyond their immediate tasks. It works less well for followers whose expertise may not be an exact fit with the current requirement, who value understanding how what they do fits in with the success of the larger organization, or who value social contact and interaction. It also may be less effective in the event the various elements of the enterprise experience minor to major disruption or variance from expectation.
Technical leadership, you know what needs done and how to do it. As the resident expert, your followers need only follow your instruction and direction. Your style is a particularly good fit for inexperienced followers who are eager to improve their skills and demonstrate their value to the organization. It also works well for more experienced followers who are comfortable deferring to superior knowledge and expertise. It may work less well for followers who value more autonomy and want to become experts in their own right. For those who value independence,
motivational leadership. Although you may not be especially charismatic, even a small measure of charisma adds to followers' attraction to you and to their desire to align. Your verbal and interpersonal presence are compelling and interject energy and want to as you followers coordinate their energy, interests, and aspirations with yours. This works well for motivating less engaged followers but may pull weaker and less centered followers into blindly following, with a minimal sense of consequences or personal responsibility.
Values leadership. Your strength is in showing followers why what they and you do is important, why it matters. This works well for followers whose personal views and priorities are already near alignment with yours. You have a knack for encouraging followers deeper into the fold. Alternatively, followers who are more diverse shy away from your leadership and over time, your organization tends to become more and more homogenized.
Although a few leaders may be restricted to one or more of the six styles, most blend all, depending on the situation or particular circumstance. Even so, leaders typically find their comfort zone limited to one or perhaps two styles. They consciously shift outside their comfort zones temporarily but cannot sustain the shift. Without high and continuous self-awareness, they drift toward one-dimensional leadership. This becomes especially pronounced during periods of organizational disruption, higher than usual personal stress, or when confronted with atypical or unfamiliar situations or circumstances.
A lot of emphasis is given to commitment and persistence. Those in charge should be obsessively committed to the agreed-upon mission and should then persist in its pursuit. Success is a zero-sum, win-lose, game, with the prize going only to those who succeed. This idea is captured in, after you've done everything you can do, do what you can't do. Do what you can't do? Yes. For if you don't, success is in jeopardy and may in fact be foreclosed. The key here is in not equating can't do with will never be able to do. Not being able to do something right now simply defines the challenge which is getting from can't do to can do. Those who engage this challenge represent the pool from which leaders are appropriately selected. They are the folks who may legitimately be in charge. Henry Ford asked and answered the most pertinent question, the question, who ought to be bosses, like asking, who ought to be the tenor in the quartet? Obviously, the person who can sing tenor. It's definitely good to be able to sing tenor, to know the words to the song. The question is, what song does the tenor sing?
Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said the song is, treat people as if they were what they ought to be, and you will help them to become what they are capable of being.
Confucius' arrangement of the tune was, if you lead the people with correctness, would they not to be correct?
Even John Steinbeck had a version of that song for would-be tenors, "It is the nature of man to rise to greatness if greatness is expected of him."
How do you sing tenor? How does that song go? The special gift of the tenor is in knowing what people ought to be and how to lead correctly. If you qualify as boss, knowing what people ought to be and what it means to lead correctly are second nature for you. If they aren't, if you don't have a clue, singing tenor is definitely not in your future. Unfortunately, a lot of people are boss, who couldn't sing tenor on their best day, and quite a few of them can't even carry a tune. The most pertinent issue here is, are you a real tenor or just trying to pass yourself off as something you aren't? If you're the real deal, you
treat people as if they are what they ought to be.
Lead with correctness.
Expect greatness.
There is low consensus around a single definition of leadership, and similarly low agreement about the roles and responsibilities of leaders. Accept the observation as cautionary. The propositions we are offering here represent our perspectives that are but some among many. Test their validity against your experience and expertise as you evaluate their merit and utility.
Proposition 1. Organizations continuously transition from the present state to a future state. The leader's role is to effect the transition so as to actualize the desired future state by reducing and eliminating the disparity between the present and future states, without redefining or compromising the future state.
Action Corollary 1, manage for today, lead for tomorrow.
Action Corollary 2, focus management on what is, leadership on what ought to be.
Action Corollary 3, management keeps the organization on the road and moving forward, leadership assures the road taken, leads to what ought to be.
Action Corollary 4, managers typically determine plan A will not work as expected, leaders expeditiously move the organization to plan B.
Proposition 2. The leadership of an organization is always an exact fit with the current path of the organization.
Action Corollary 1. Managers maintain the status quo and control whatever threatens or may threaten the current state. Leaders seek change and transformation in the interest of an envisioned future state.
Action Corollary 2. Managers preserve, leaders innovate.
Proposition 3. Organizations trend toward stabilization.
Corollary 1. Management and leadership are inherently opposing forces within an organization.
Conclusion 1. Management represents organizational stability and permanence. Leadership represents instability and impermanence.
Conclusion 2. Change and transformation threaten the status quo and intensify organizational inertia.
Conclusion 3. The effectiveness of leadership is inversely related to the degree of inertia intensification caused by leadership.
Leadership is at its essence, the capacity to get 10 or 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 people to do something, to act in a particular way, to move in a specific direction. The product of leadership is action. Choosing the action and effectuating the motion is leadership. There are many approaches to leading, but here I am limiting our discussion to 4 primary strategies.
Leadership by example. The leader actively does what needs done with the expectation others will follow suit. A leader leads by example, whether he intends to or not. The notion is those who follow will tend to go where you go, do as you do. Example is, thus, an element of all leadership. Using leadership by example as your primary strategy goes beyond this though. E.M. Kelly gets at the bigger idea. Remember the difference between a boss and a leader. A boss says, go! A leader says, let's go. If we add, and I will show you how, we capture the essential leadership concept, leading by example.
Leadership by delegation. The leader defines and assigns tasks and activities. This strategy was captured by Theodore Roosevelt when he said, the best executive is the one who has sense enough to pick good men to do what he wants done, and self-restraint enough to keep from meddling with them while they do it. The key phrases here are, do what he wants done, and keep from meddling. To delegate is to assign activities and responsibilities with the expectation they will be completed. It is a mostly hands-off approach used with competent followers. White D. Eisenhower also championed delegation, not to suggest it is a strategy reserved only for presidents. Leadership, the art of getting someone else to do something you want done because he wants to do it. Think of delegation as define, assign, and then confine your responsibility to oversight and encouragement. You delegate and then step away.
Leadership by empowerment. The leader defines the expected outcome. Empowerment is a simple strategy. The leader so clearly and persuasively defines the outcome, it becomes an end in itself, compelling, consuming. Lao Tzu caught the essence when saying, "The lead the people, walk behind them." The people are empowered, heading en masse to the outcome. Ralph Nader expanded and elaborated, "The leader is the vision and conviction that a dream can be achieved. He inspires the power and energy to get it done. The leader implores. The outcome matters. It is to be realized. You can do it. Go forth and succeed."
Leadership by consensus. The group defines what to do and what will be accomplished. This is a non-leadership leadership strategy of sorts. The leadership enables and facilitates. The followers define, align, and proceed. Alexander Drurline gets at the strategy when saying, "There go my people. I must find out where they are going so I can lead them." To successfully lead by consensus may be the most difficult and challenging of the four strategies. It takes a special knack not to intrude into the follower's decision process or introduce one's own opinions, biases, or point of view. Paraphrasing from Witabina, the way of life according to Lao Tzu, a leader is best when people barely know that he exists. Here, the leader is an ever-present, but mostly silent partner.